Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment, our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. reaction commentary series that is made for the longtime S.H.I.E.L.D. fan that wants to come on here and talk endlessly about one of our favorite shows of all time. I'm Alexis, of course, joined by David. Last time we talked about the episode Space Time and especially how kind of monumental it is in terms of like how much of what happens in that episode goes on to really kind of inform where the rest of the show is going to go in various reasons, in various storylines, in various manifestations, as a matter of fact. It's kind of like really interesting when you think about that. And today we are talking about episode 16 of season 3 called Paradise Lost. This was written by George Kitson and Charlotte Oliver, directed by Wendy Stansler. This was broadcast on April 12th, 2016 on ABC Television Network to 3.1 million viewers. It returns, of course, our main cast, Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, Brett Dalton, Chloe Bennett, Ian DeCastaker, Elizabeth Henstridge, Henry Simmons, and Luke Mitchell. And, of course, our recurring guest and guest appearances by Powers Booth as Gideon Malik, Bethany Joy Lenz as Stephanie Malik, Reed Diamond as Daniel Whitehall, Mark Dacascos as Guerra, Cameron Pilatus as young Gideon Malik, Joel Dabney Courtney as Nathaniel Malik, and Axel Whitehead as James. As far as the writing is concerned, here's some tidbits and trivia from some of the pages that is publicly available for everybody. After the previous episode, executive producers Jed Whedon and Marissa Chancharowan discussed how the title characters would be affected by the reveal that Hive was walking around in the body of Grant Ward. Going into this episode, with Whedon saying, "This is going to be the most shocking for Coulson because he did something dark, but for a good reason, and now he knows he didn't achieve much. Maybe he even did something or created something worse with that act. I think that Coulson's real feelings about Ward will come to the surface. For everybody else, obviously it's going to be a very large threat," Tantrowan added. "Up until this point, Coulson has been coping with what he did to Ward back on Mavith by just pushing forward, not really thinking about it. Now, basically Ward's face filled the screen in his office and he literally came face to face with the person that he killed. And he's no longer a person, so what is he is still a question. We've been alluding to the fact that he's the ultimate symbol of evil, so that's not good." Bethany Joy Lenz was briefly introduced as Stephanie Malik in Parting Shot, ahead of her larger role in this episode, of which Tantrowan explained, "We definitely wanted to explore what it's like to be a family that grew up in the religion of Hydra, if you will. How that is the backbone of their beliefs and their bond. It's a very interesting dynamic, this father-daughter relationship in the world of Hydra." On the character kissing Hive moments before her death, Whedon said, "Is it creepy that she's basically kissing her uncle? Yes, but she's caught up. This is the most powerful thing that she's ever been taught to worship her whole life that's been paying attention to her. If she took a step back, maybe she would think a little harder about it. But in the moment, she's just enthralled." And then, of course, later she drops dead, so. Not much time there to reflect on anything at all. So, yeah. This is going to be, I think, another one of these episodes in season 3. I think we're beginning to really take shape in a way, you know? Season 3, I should say, is beginning to take shape in terms of, like, what this season is going to be known for. It certainly does feel like the kind of episodes that we're getting with season 3 is everything is really pushing the story forward, but it's kind of like masking itself and like, okay, but we're going to frame it from the lens of focusing on this character this week. So it feels like this might be a Gideon Malik centric episode, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. Those are always fun. This show has had, at this point, a really good history of how it deals with its extended cast of characters, but especially with its villains. It's always really interesting to see where it goes. But before we get into this particular reaction, David, do we have any comments from the previous episode?
Yeah. Got 3 from episode 14.
Let's do it.
First one's from Silva. I enjoyed the soapbox rant, Agent Soto. It was interesting to see the resonating themes of this episode after recent events in the USA. Daisy and Max debate.
Wait, which episode is this?
Watch Dogs.
Yeah. I'm just realizing what that was. I'm sorry, I wasn't sure about which rant that is. It's like I, at this point, there's a rant that I do every single episode of any show. So it's like, okay, but which one do you mean? And I was thinking about last week, and I'm like, wait, what? Oh, that's right. We did record Watch Dogs that particular week. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That, and especially with how things started with the terrorist attack. Oh my God, it was.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate the fact that people didn't completely tune me out when I do get on my soapbox, which if you know me, is literally all of the time. I don't necessarily shy away from my perspective on things. I do feel strongly. That the perspective that I have and that many share is rising in popularity in terms of like where we are in this moment. I do feel that there are a lot of perspectives out there in on the interwebs that are either misinformed or are spreading those arguments in the interest of bad faith. Or in the interest of profiting off of people's whatever you want, their hate, their ignorance. And so literally the entire time that I have been on this podcast network have like, no, we need to talk about these things. Because I feel like it's also touching on that added layer as well. So, yeah. Thank you, Silva, for that.
Silva also says, Daisy and Mac's debate about doxing and intense interrogation hit different as well. Be safe and always speak the truth to power.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mm. As I don't even know if I want to frame it this way, but like there's a new movie out called One Battle After Another, which features Leo DiCaprio. One of the things that I think people are going to walk away from is, and you see it in the trailer where Leo says, Viva la Revolución. It's hilarious, but definitely speaks to how, you know, a lot of people right now are kind of finding a little bit of a community with one another in a lot of the perilousness of the timing of where we are in the world. So, yeah, right on, basically. Go ahead, David. Next comment.
And next one's from Serenity. My only thought for this one is, I love that May being the Calvary means she gets these moments with Simmons and later on towards the end of season 5 with Yo-Yo about living with making the tough choices for Simmons freeing Lash and Yo-Yo for killing Ruby. Yeah. She's definitely the one that's like just always kind of always making those hard talks with everyone whenever it comes to their job and all that. A lot of her lines just remind me of Kratos from God of War, where you have that character too who made like horrible decisions in his life and always tries to kind of throw it at others whenever they're kind of leading the same path towards him. So it's really cool when you get those moments with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then next one's from Gary Marshall. For me, this is the episode where May unofficially became Gemma's supervising officer.
That's a really good way of that's another one I didn't that's a really good observation. You know, with Watch Dogs, that was an episode where, if I remember correctly, from 2 weeks ago, which is crazy to think how Watch Dogs, when we recorded that, was 2 weeks ago. Feels like it was 2 months ago at this point. It was like holy shit, like the way that time just flies by is insane. But what I loved about the reaction about Watch Dogs is you saw, I think, us in real time kind of realize like, oh, wait a minute. A lot of things, a lot of big things kind of start here. And it's like, I wonder if like they're intentionally planting seeds here, or if it's just kind of like, maybe we'll get to it, but like, it's crazy. There were a lot of moments that would really kind of like put characters off in a different like direction in the future. But that was when I didn't really stand out. But I guess if you will, yes, I guess that would make like in this sense, like I don't know how much we actually get to see, although to be fair, we didn't really see May really train Sky all that much on screen. I'm not sure if that's really that important. Just the fact that we know that off screen, Simmons is basically taking lessons about how to defend herself is going to actually pay dividends, because even with like season 4 and season 5, we see her. I mean, Simmons has gone through a lot as a character to this point, so she can very much do quite a bit on her own. But after the events of what happened with, you know, getting kidnapped by Guerra and then having to choose to basically trade her life for all the other ones, you know, depending on Lash to save her. Let's just say, you know, Simmons is going to do quite a lot. I mean, specifically with May and Simmons' relationship, it kind of gets a little bit testy next season, with the fact that, you know, Simmons is kind of like made to be everybody's supervisor, including May's. So that kind of gets a little bit interesting. But then, of course, speaking to the whole thing about, you know, Simmons getting trained, at least in combat or in some ways how to defend herself. I mean, how she was able to really maneuver her way and survive through being Cassius's slave in season 5. I'm not even sure if the Simmons, I think, well, obviously Mavith was a big fucking deal, right? Like Mavith really kind of like was the one that, yeah, Simmons, there really wasn't any going back. And that's what is really, I think, beautiful about how this show handles its characters, is that when they go through an ordeal, something this, you know, massive in their lives, it changes them. Nothing ever happens on this show where like, oh, this big thing happens and then we just go back to where we were. No, the show is always moving forward. Mm-hmm. The show is always pushing its characters forward and with forward momentum. And it's been a big season of change. So yes, that was a really good observation there.
Yeah, for sure. It explains why by season 4, with May Simmons seen in the opener as proof, Gemma suddenly carries herself with far more confidence, which would make perfect sense if May had been training her off screen.
Mm-hmm. I think I beat you to the punch there.
Yeah.
I basically just said that, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember, because like, in my head, they always just see them as like their final season counterparts, not so much as like their
right.
last season. So I'm hoping to get that like, oh shoot moment, like I did with Fitz, you know, in the... what is it? Parting shot episode. So
yes,
I can't wait to see that. Okay. And then should we go for episode 15 or just wait those till next?
We can wait. For that one.
Okay.
That way we have something.
All right.
And
that's all though.
Well, then I think it's time to go ahead and begin. Let's go ahead and start the reaction in 3, 2, 1 and go. this actor, it's actually really crazy good casting. I could totally buy him as a young version of Gideon. What's also interesting is that you kind of forget, it's not the same actor, but Gideon's brother there, Nathaniel, that's going to be one of the main villains in season 7.
Mm-hmm.
He gets recast in season 7, but he also is very much different. And I think the implication there is that because he ended up surviving, that ended up basically creating a branch-like version of this character to where like he's just not, it doesn't feel like the same person beyond just not being the same actor. He's like shitting bricks right now. Colson's like, fuck me, man. I can't get rid of this piece of shit. What do I have to do? Right? Like,
yeah. That was interesting. The music.
Yeah, it's an interesting motif. But I got more of a reaction from May. It's just like, you said you killed him.
Yeah.
You just like, I love May looking on the bright side. That's great. We know that she really wanted to kill him. And you know what? I really wish she got that chance.
Yeah.
That would have been really satisfying. Right? I just noticed Lincoln was there. I swear to God, I was like, oh, Lincoln's there. He was just standing there.
Oh, I think I missed him. Okay. it's kind of weird hearing his accent, or like that, not his accent, but like that accent.
Yeah. Well, really interesting parallel here. It's like there was a parallel last episode with Gideon and with Daisy. In this episode, they're both, I think, grappling with the visions that they saw and how they're going to move forward. You know, Gideon is not necessarily wrong when he says that Hive kills him. Daisy is the one that does the quaking, although at this point, very much like she becomes one with Hive. So I think very clearly from the start, I feel like you just had this feeling that, yeah, I think whatever Hive is, I think Hive didn't really, I think, care to ever have Gideon and all that involved after, like, considering the fact that Nathaniel is a part of him. So there's that. But again, it's just like, I mean, all this really is Gideon's fault. Like, you have everything you ever could want.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you tempt fate by, like, bringing back this demon. And you think he's going to just keep you around because why? You think he needs you? Yeah.
And kind of gross how just but, he just kind of passed those thoughts, beliefs, whatever, into his daughter. And
yeah,
what happens to her in the end? Just...
Yeah, oh yeah, that's See, at this point, if I'm Gideon, I'm like, yeah, I have this like gathering to go to on the other side of the planet. I'm gonna hop on my private plane and I'll be right back. I gotta go real quick, right? Yeah. Like I would not stay. I would get the fuck out of there and hide.
Honestly,
my first thought
was to say, hey, quit fucking with me and just give me some answers here. Like, come on.
Right.
I don't know.
By the way, isn't it fucking insane how a lot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. looks way better than a lot of the Marvel movies just because they go outside and shoot? Like, it's really embarrassing. Like, S.H.I.E.L.D. got, like, what, maybe $5 million an episode? Right? Like, five compared to, like, 352? I think the Marvels is like $350 million. Yeah, well. Yeah, I wouldn't piss her off. Daisy doesn't really have that much of a... Daisy has a pretty short time. Yeah. Yeah. Neither of them, I think, have much patience. I would not piss either of them off. It is really, I need to choose my words carefully here, like, the way religion can really just drive you into a psychosis is, and again, this, I mean, Hydra, religion, cult, whatever, but it's just like, it gets you into a frame of mind, and it takes a long time to really open your mind up to thinking to different kinds of perspectives or ways of thinking. And it's just like, yeah, Dad was afraid to be the traveler because, like, I mean, this was never really anything in service of themselves. It was more so to get back this demon, and then look at what happens. I don't know how many more chances we're going to get this season to really praise Powers Booth, but like he's been outstanding this episode. Just like he's getting me freaking anxious and nervous just by looking at him.
Right. Just, especially in this last moment where he's just like, we don't know what's going to happen next and all that. But also just the range of his emotions that he's showing where he just has to be like, you know, super calm, but he's like frying as all hell. And and then just those moments where he has to feel confident in front of Ward and everything. Just, it's so good.
It really is. Again, where's my jet so I can get the fuck out of here? Like, let's do it.
That was cool. I liked it the first time. It's like, hey, teasing us. It's like, not showing the whole thing. That's cool.
Damn.
That was so close. He is really fucking dangerous.
Yeah. Ooh.
That's cool.
Yeah. Don't underestimate the cavalry.
For sure.
Woke, woke. Where's the woke police? That's woke. How dare you say oil businesses are bad for the planet and they're the equivalent of evil guys. That's totally, completely true. Destroying the planet for financial resources and crushing all kinds of interests that would be against them being able to drill into the planet endlessly. Oh, now you want to run, do you? I mean, James is obviously like not someone who should have powers, but like it is crazy to think that Lincoln has not brought this up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And like, come on, like.
See, like even right there, like he just knows already. It's like, all right, this guy's fucking with me. God damn it. And so he's just done.
Yeah, I think it's obvious that's, now.
That's so cool. Again, just,
yeah.
He's such a good actor.
Yeah. Come on, that's a bar right there. The way he's basically bringing Nathaniel to the surface, just like this, is so unsettling. Really a tricky avenue for Brett Dalton to play. It's like, I'm playing a version of Ward, but not really, and now I have these other people who have to...
Also, it does make you wonder, too. It's just like, does the thing... Like, does the parasite, like, feel, sorry, is it just Nathaniel's feelings coming into the surface, or is it actually, like, the parasite, you know, being frustrated for him? That's actually, like, kind of curious. I wonder if, like...
That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. Maybe it becomes a part of him?
Yeah,
a part of him. I mean, literally, the travelers do become a part of him.
Yeah. I'm actually more curious of like whether what the actor thought, like what was he going through? Is like, is it the parasite feeling frustrated and, you know,
maybe sad it about works this, like or... a maybe it works like speaking of Dragon Ball, I'm thinking of Dragon Ball. Maybe like Majin Buu, like he absorbs somebody, but then like their memories and their consciousness in a way. Kind of inform his own conscious and his own memories. What the fuck?
I know. Dan,
Malik's face is like, what? And then...
I will say, I feel like the kiss was unnecessary. I think it would have been cooler if, like, you know, he says, I need a Malik by my side, and then, like, gets behind her, and that's when he starts, like, absorbing her or something, or killing her. I think that would have been cooler. Oh, yeah, that.
Oh, yeah. This is happening, too. This is the 16th episode of this season.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that there were a lot of characters to juggle. And let me just reiterate, it has been a fantastic season with amazing episodes. It has become abundantly clear how this far and away is the weakest link of everything that has been going on from the very beginning and continues to be. And I want to be fair here. It's like, I really feel bad for Chloe Bennett and Daisy's character that she, like, basically, it almost feels like Lincoln's kind of an anchor that's also, like, weighing a lot of, like, her story. I mean, Daisy, for the most part, hasn't had too much of an opportunity to shine. I think the last part of the season really becomes all hers when we get to that point. But, like, and Luke Mitchell, look, I don't know what's happening here. But it's just, like, it felt like they were spinning their wheels. I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm just saying that this information here, this is the 16th episode. I feel like we took way too long to get here. Mm-hmm. If we're only just now beginning to explore his dark side, which, by the way, this explanation right here definitely would have been well needed for a lot of us who have been quite frustrated and have had it to hear with Lincoln just being a bit of a bitch, you know, and just being like angry for no reason. Like, mm-hmm. This puts it into perspective. Like, he has a traumatic and dark history.
Yeah.
And I feel like going forward, it's going to be a lot easier to understand him and kind of like be sympathetic with him. But we've spent so much of this season not really having that information and just feeling kind of like, hey, dude, why are you so mad? Cool your jets here.
Mm-hmm. Like, they did bring up...
Again, not to take away from this moment, but it feels like this is a bit too late to have this moment.
Go ahead. No, yeah. I mean, they did show that, like, he had a struggle with some sort of
briefly.
Addiction. Yeah. It was very brief. Doesn't really get brought up.
Later, at all.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Until, like, now?
Yeah. And... I don't know. Like, I like when you know this moment specifically, like once you finally know, like, okay, yeah, he has like an alcohol problem and everything. And when you rewatch it, you know, I really do like that moment where, what was it? It was like,
by the way, David, I don't want to cut you off here. Maybe to hold the thought, but this right here is one of my favorite action sequences of the whole season.
Okay.
What's about to happen right here with Guerra basically single-handedly bringing down the Zephyr team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you recall what happens here, but it's like a really cool sequence.
Mm-hmm. No, it was actually really smart how he got out. That's actually really cool.
Yeah.
Using the belt buckle and all that. Also, I was going to say, like, oh, yeah, if it's going to be cool. No, wait, never mind. I forgot he has that.
And by the way, this comes back in the season finale where Fitz actually ends up killing Guerra. With a cloaked gun. So I think this comes back around later on. Ouch. Holy shit. Just like that, the whole team's down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which has never happened before, I think. Like, everybody just gets captured.
Mm-hmm. Man up, Gideon. I'm just kidding. Right. I'm waiting for him to say that. I forgot what I was going to say with Lincoln. What did I leave off?
It'll come up, I'm sure. It's just, I just didn't want to talk over that because it's just one of my favorite sequences here. I'm going to Reddit. Lincoln saying, "I would never hurt you," makes me believe he's going to definitely hurt Daisy. That's just the top comment right there. Like the first thing that I read. Really cool episode. It's always awesome to see Hive do anything, especially when you give Brett Dalton another layer to play with. Really enjoyed seeing the backstory on Malik. I knew Hive was Nathaniel, but didn't see Malik's daughter dying coming. I really like James. I hope he comes back. Oh, he will. And is allowed to go through the Terra Genesis. So unbelievably excited to see the Secret Warriors in action saving S.H.I.E.L.D. Brett Dalton is killing his role once again, but I'm pretty pissed we didn't get a full-on reveal of its true form. I need a face shot, not just some slimy tentacles slithering around. Oh, it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the twist with Stephanie's death. Squidward says, "I'll still need a Malik by my side," and then kisses her. So we're all thinking that she's going to become Madame Hydra or something, and Gideon is going to be turned inside out like his vision. But nope, it was pretty clever misdirection, actually. I love the inclusion of Whitehall. It feels like all these Hydra groups have only been loosely connected, but his appearance helps make the pieces fit together a little bit. Let's see here. So let me get this straight. Hive/Hydra are trying to find and capture all Inhumans, and now they have captured almost the entire team. So what do Daisy and Lincoln decide to do? Assemble all the Inhumans and go to Hydra's base. Seems like this could really easily backfire. To be clear, I'm not sure they even are aware of like what Hive's abilities even are at this point. So There's that. Let me go ahead and go over to Eric Goldman, IGN. Skipping Stones. Nice misdirect, S.H.I.E.L.D. When they introduced Stephanie Malik recently, it seemed obvious she was going to end up in some sort of weird relationship with Hive, and everything in this episode fed into that. She noted how handsome he was. He gave her a gift, albeit one meant to unsettle her father. And when Hive revealed the truth about Malik with Stephanie present, it seemed clear Powers Booth's time on the show was about to end and the Bride of Hive story would begin. But nope, Hive straight up killed her. Anyone else think for a second he was going to take over her body and discard wards, sending Malik the ultimate lesson in providing a nice swerve for the show in the process? The flashbacks to Gideon as a young man only helped make it seem like this would be his swan song, while doing a nice job of showing how his decision to protect himself at all costs, like his father, would cause him to lose his brother and eventually his daughter. In the midst of this, there was a bit more dimension given to Lincoln as we delved into his alcoholic past, but he had been referenced before. I was glad to see Daisy be straight with him about the vision she saw and make it clear that even though she isn't sure whose death it is, but that it is presumably the end for someone on the team. Also on the Daisy front, pretty cool how she used her powers to set off all those landmines. Now that Coulson knows Hive is walking around in Ward's body, we got a bit more introspection here about Coulson's decision to mercilessly kill Ward. I don't know if they quite sold Coulson's angst, but I did like the differing reactions from Fitz and May. Going back to the action side of things, it was really exciting to see the big fight between Kung Lao and Chun-Li. Okay, it was between Guerrero and Mei. Well, let's go with Mark Dacascos and Ming-Na Wen's past in Mortal Kombat Legacy and Street Fighter, okay? Either way, it was a very fun fight and nice to see things get more physical for Guerrero given he was mainly has mainly used his powers up until now. Let's go over to Alex McLevy at AV Club. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s past come back to haunt them and their enemies. There's a million variations of on the old. You may be done with the past, but the past isn't done with you. Saw. And for good reason. Or maybe he meant to say same. And for good reason. So much of who we are and what we do is filtered through our previous experiences. And those collective histories dictate our future actions for good and ill. Often this is meant as a way to, of pointing out things we haven't noticed about what came before, or events and emotions we'd buried or forgotten. But sometimes it's the exact opposite, and there's situations or repercussions we just can't forget. Melinda May reminded Simmons that just a couple weeks ago when she told her to embrace her guilt and use it, perhaps that's the distinction between morality and amorality. When we don't feel right about our past actions, it's the issue of whether we try to right them or bury them. These opposing approaches to the past were at the heart of Paradise Lost, and they were represented by Phil Coulson and Gideon Malik. The former continues to be haunted by what happened on the alien planet. His vengeful murder of Grant Ward has come back, quite literally, he ruefully notes, to haunt him. Coulson let his anger dictate his actions, and even if they were necessary, something Fitz certainly thinks is true, they had unintended consequences, ones the team is now paying for in blood. It's not that the alternative was letting him win, as Fitz suggests. Don't you see? When I killed him, he did, Coulson says. Ward got his big gift, just not in the way he had anticipated. But Coulson's nagging doubt at his own actions spurs him to act now and behave the way he thinks is right. Contrast this with the story of Gideon Malik. Throughout Paradise Lost, we got flashbacks of his days as a young man, when Gideon and his brother Nathaniel discovered their father had been cheating at the stone ceremony all those years. That fear of being a traveler made its way into Gideon, who, for all his big talk, ended up choosing the same cowardly route that his dad did, and leaving his siblings sentenced to death, and eventual rebirth of a sort, by passing through the monolith. But he willfully buried his past, hiding it as his father did, beneath lip service pieties in that old edition of Paradise Lost. He couldn't own up to his actions, which meant he had no excuses, no defenses, when Hive threw that betrayal back in Gideon's face. We may be done with the past, but the past is here to kill our daughters and punish our weakness. Now you understand sacrifice, indeed. Lincoln and Daisy are also revisiting the past in a number of ways. Lincoln is trying to have it both ways, digging up what's useful from his time in Afterlife, which is James, while trying to keep hidden the even older trauma from his personal history, his drunk driving accident. Daisy properly calls him out on his evasiveness, and Lincoln shares his past. The theme of the episode is again writ large, albeit in clunky fashion, as this series still has an unfortunate tendency to turn any potential subtext into straight-up text. Happily, that comes after some useful table setting. As it turns out, James is fairly knowledgeable about the history of Hive. He provides the TLDR version of Hive's past on Earth, and our heroes finally realize the first Inhuman was created for the express purpose of leading an army of his brethren. A coalition of human and inhuman collaborators banished him, but it's starting to be clear to even someone as slow on the uptake as Lincoln that the entity possessing Ward's body is planning to complete the mission for which he was birthed. And that might be the difference between everyone else and Hive. He can't wait to show people his true self, even if, to those of us in the audience, all we get to witness was the back of his head turning into a reject from the Pirates of the Caribbean's Flying Dutchman. Seriously, that face better be creepy as hell, or else it was a real waste of a buildup. The real action of this week happened with the rest of the team storming the GT agrochemical facility to capture Mr. Guerra and investigate the research Hive was so eager to hide. I feel that there's probably a big piece of paper taped to this show's writer's room that says, when in doubt, lock someone in a room with May. The end of Act 3 with Guerra turning around to realize the trap that's been set for him was cracking good fun. If only the fight had lived up to that tease. Despite some of good shots and the judicious use of slow motion acrobats, judicious, I should say, use of slow motion acrobats. There was still too much cutting back and forth. Surely Ming-Na Wen and Mark Dacascos, of all people, are skilled enough to let you film a fight sequence without feeling the need to cut away every half a second. There may not be two better candidates for such a brawl on the show. In fact, even which was why it was a bummer to see it edited so heavily. Last week's Helmer, Kevin Tancharoen, was sorely missed here. But Gira is a more formidable opponent than anyone anticipated. His escape from the high-tech holding cell? Maybe time to beef up those power-resistant prisons, eh? Simmons? led to the entire shield Zephyr being captured and erstwhile our protagonists along with it. And blah, blah, blah. Okay. All right. Oh, and I guess we should go ahead and get to Ami.
Insane. I like that we didn't get a good look at, you know, his true form, but God, I can't wait. I hope we do get to see it. But also them trying to understand what he is. Like when he degrades these corpses and stuff like that, or breaks off his body, he is a living hive of these parasitic organisms that collectively create matter, dissipate. It's not really a sand, I'm guessing. It's just the particles that make up his body. And that's what eats these people, takes over these people, that he imparts into those around him. And he was one of the original Inhumans. He was designed to lead the Inhuman army, but it got to the point where the Inhumans of the time feared him so much that they united with humanity to lock him away. And is that because his entire purpose, because of this hive mechanism that he has, he was basically meant to be the one-man controller for that army, forcing its will upon a greater machination? They're talking about these invasive species, how to combat them, how to deter them. So they were working in these ways to try to break that up. These, again, conglomerates, these swarms of birds, these swarms of insects. He is a living, walking, talking swarm. So whatever they were trying to do there, maybe is he destroyed all of that work because whatever they were working on to break that up may affect him as well. Maybe break apart his ability to, you know, congeal into a unit that functions. Maybe disrupt that communication between the individual particles. I'm curious about all of that. Also kind of curious about, I mean, he does know and doesn't need to know more than what we saw, at least up until this point. But I thought we, with Greer being in there and captured, we'd have more of a play on that whole idea that he can see what his pawns, his thralls, also see and hear. Like, we've seen that before. He saw and heard things that he heard, an experience that was there for. When Greer was talking all on his own with Malik, which was meant to be in confidence between the two, supposed to be something that he kept secret from Ward, he still knew it. He still heard it. And they did talk as this collective we. So I imagine that's what it was. That's my guess. It's wild to me that we got this story about Malik, who, you know, over their many years of running these rituals and being like one of the head families of this cult, you know, him and he took after his father in this way that especially after he learned that his father had been gaming the system the entire time, kind of tainted his idea of that. And in this way, it just goes to show that at the end of the day, no matter how devout he pretends to be, he still fears what it is they are doing. Like, he's trying to understand, he wants to understand, but he's afraid they don't have the whole picture. And just of putting his own life on the line. So much so to the point that he sabotaged his own brother. And now we also learned that the memories of all of the hosts over the years, every traveler, every person that was sent over and consumed by this thing, their memories live on in this creature. He was talking to his brother. His brother got to kind of talk back, and then his brother made out with his daughter, which is fucking weird. Who knows? Maybe for a split second, for a while that was going on, he recessed away. That persona, that personality melted back, and it was Creature Ward or whoever, but yeah, he was just talking as the uncle and then went to town and then murdered her so they would feel real sacrifice. Their chess game against each other that they are playing, like, he's trying to, like, just find his footing in this position. Ever since this creature came back and got strong, he's been trying to, like, figure out how to secure his safety this entire time, especially now that he saw that vision. He's been more desperate to do so as well, but it also carried around this guilt and the way he was poking and prodding, trying to figure out if there was any answers, any consolation, or anything of note about what his brother went through, or if his brother was still in there in some way. And I wonder if that was to connect with his brother, if there was the hope of that, so that he could, like, ask for forgiveness, or if it was to ask more or less if this entity knows what he did. He's trying his best to get the best of this entity, and it's just not working out. Meanwhile, Lincoln and Daisy went on this little journey to go find this guy who... How did he even find out about it? I forgot about it, because it's not like he had powers. So how did he stumble upon... I know he was digging through some stuff in Jiang's quarters, trying to dig through their ancient texts and stuff like that. Obviously, the stuff that she feared, like the monoliths, the portals to this other world where this thing was sealed away. That's what she feared. She was withholding that information from the rest of them just to kind of make sure that people wouldn't be tempted to reach out or learn more about it or release this thing if they found out about it. He just kept poking and prodding and be like, what the hell is this about? This is our history. This is our heritage. Because of all of that, he was never allowed to turn because of the way he behaved and acted in afterlife. I mean, I could be remembering it wrong, but it seemed like it implied that he knew about it before he started going through all of Jiang's stuff. And then I'm just like, well, how did that happen? Correct me about that if I misunderstood that bit. And then he's just trying to turn it around on Lincoln. Obviously, he's jealous. He's lashing out, and he knew Lincoln back before anybody else did, before he even got chosen to get powers. You know, we had a little more of Lincoln's history drudged up. Obviously, it gives us context for that relationship with that guy that helped him out, which I presume was his sponsor or something along those lines, after he did start to try to clean up and all that. And, like, it's just, like, his story is extremely heartbreaking, man. Like, you're feeling empty. You feel lost. And sometimes it can be a substance of any kind or a habit or a quest or something you occupy yourself just trying to fill this emptiness. And it seemed like they were implying that as in humans, they, no matter what, have a void that they cannot fill until they turn. So it makes me wonder, like, yeah, if she had never even got her powers but still happened to meet her parents, would she still feel empty? Like, even if that's what she was focused on, would that still, if she never got the Terrigen Crystal or anything like that, or the, you know, her transformation, would she still feel that emptiness? And then if that was the case, what would she have done next if that wasn't enough? I don't know. The more we learn about the Inhumans and their makeup, it's just really wild to kind of go through. And obviously, you know, now that the team knows that Ward is back as this zombie.
I mean, that probably right there is a really interesting explanation for why it was. I mean, it doesn't really go said here in the episode, but I think that's a really good way of kind of looking as to why, because James brings up the question. Jiang elected to give you powers after what you did? And it very well could be that Jiang just, well, look, clearly addiction's an issue with him. There's something that he feels like he's just been he needs. And seemingly, him turning into an Inhuman, Lincoln seemingly kind of fixed his problems, mm-hmm, for the most part. So if you look at it from Jiang's perspective, it seems like she was right.
Yeah, but then
it did help.
Also, too, like, he felt guilty about what he did. And she probably knows that this is just going to be a problem that's going to progress.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get his powers. Whereas with that one dude,
James,
and even that little girl who May killed.
Yes, Katia.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, them getting powers is just going to enhance what they already are. Where they probably wouldn't feel remorse with what they do with their powers and all that. You know, that's sort of the thing that she always looks out for when choosing someone to become an Inhuman, is what more will you become of who you are, you know? And
yeah,
what I was trying to say during the episode is I really did like that moment, especially with the context of everything that we know about Lincoln, of him, like, explaining to Daisy when he was in afterlife, like, you know, there was, you know, a piece to his life, you know, it was in was in equilibrium, I guess you can say. But now that it's gone, and now that what happened with Jiaying, you know, he's genuinely scared of, like, I don't have my equilibrium now. I'm like, where do I go from here? And it's also, and I really like rewatching that moment, because it's like, oh shoot, yeah, you were struggling with a lot before becoming a human, and you are struggling now with, like, what the fuck to do with your life. I just wish we would have gone that sooner. Like, all that information, like, a whole lot sooner. He really could have been a great character had they taken the time for that, you know? I think they just should have skipped.
Especially because, like, you assume at this point they already know. At this point, they've already made the decision that he's the one that's going to be killed off at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
If you've only got this season. And it's weird that this character was the one. I mean, look, we also said back in a couple seasons ago where it's like, yeah, they dropped the ball on Trip. I think they're really dropping the ball on Lincoln. But I feel like, I don't know if it was a consequence of them just not being as interested in those characters. I don't know if it was a consequence of them just not having the space to push it any further. I don't know. But I mean, like, but with Lincoln and Trip, it really is kind of like, well, if you're, like, really firing off on all cylinders with all these other characters, what is it with these ones where it just seemed as if there wasn't the time put in, or the desire to even put in that time? Because right now I'm watching Ami's reactions of he's wrapping up season 5, and I heard him say that I he doesn't know what's gonna come in season 6 or 7. He said that he really hopes that that Deke sticks around for the 2 final seasons, and I think that really speaks to how much of a success Deke's character was in season 5. So if you could do that with Deke, well, what happened with Lincoln? What happened with Trip? Like, yeah, it just seemed like there was just like this.
I can understand with Trip in that they kind of made him a perfect character. Like,
well, he was kind of like, yeah, he was what he was, yeah, right? Like, on the, and there was really no desire to really move beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Like, everyone liked him.
I mean,
he was reliable and all that. So I can understand that there's not really much to do with him. They just got stuck.
Do you feel then that Lincoln is just the biggest fumble then so far?
Yeah, for sure. He is the biggest fumble. Because, like, again, with Trip, I mean, I was kind of like running through loops through my head of like, man, what could you have done with him? And the only thing I can think of was to just be a foil for Ward. You know, show the opposite side of him, that he's like his opposite, you know? And then with Lincoln, yeah, it was just the big fumble. I don't think they really knew how to weave in his character with the others and not really.
Or they just waited too long. They just waited way too long.
That's the thing. That's the thing where it's going to be like the mystery of it all. Like, what exactly happened in the process where you just went, oh, shoot, we forgot about Lincoln or something, you know? Because, you know, I understand in the beginning that he didn't want any part with S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, he just wanted to be by himself, and like, all of that is understandable, but I also think it would have been okay to just have him be in S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, I think it just makes just as much sense as the other one, because even though he was fighting against S.H.I.E.L.D. in the last season and all that, he knows that they are the good guys. They were the good guys in the end, and, you know, Jiaying kind of screwed everything over. And you just could have had that little struggle with him of like what to do with his life within S.H.I.E.L.D., you know? Mm-hmm. And then you could have had that moment where he was also working in the lab with Bobby, you know, had some more moments with him and Daisy. I feel like they could have taken it in a whole lot of different directions, and maybe they just kind of went with the one that made more sense for them. And that's understandable, but if you're going to decide to kill him off in the end, you should have just, you know, gone through some loops
It may just go back to just being overstuffed with characters too. It's like, I do feel like there aren't as many characters in season 3, and yet it feels like they're taking more real estate to tell, I guess, in some ways, individual stories and maybe even longer arcs with certain characters. It's tough to do that because you also do get the sense, well, we have a character that we were introduced to at the very beginning of the season, and we've seen him like one time since then, or two times, really. And we'll see him for the final time next week, Joey Gutierrez.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot to work with him. Maybe it just begins with just not... I mean, but I also do like S.H.I.E.L.D. feeling bigger than just our immediate group sometimes, you know? So it's kind of a give and take. I also do feel... I mean, I agree with the point that this stuff with Lincoln should have come a lot sooner. But then you start working backwards with what we've already seen. Okay, well, what storylines do you cut? What characters do you cut when everything else has been so good and so well worth going through? What do you dial back?
I mean, I don't think you can't. I don't think you have to with Lincoln's story specifically. Like, you can just add him in, and I know it was a problem for Trip, but like, just have him in and just add some like quippy lines for him in certain moments. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you could. I think there was a way to add everything in and add Lincoln into the fold, you know?
I think the easiest thing is to do what you said. Just start the season with him being on the team.
Yeah.
And that may have just been the best way to kind of like get through. Him being on the team, would those anger issues would have come out eventually. So that mm-hmm. would have definitely been there at play.
And maybe yeah. just show like a side of him that he does still believe in kind of what Jiaying was doing with Afterlife. Like, he kind of wants that back of sorts. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe that could be the clash between him and Daisy. You know, she's thinking about like building an army or a team of sorts with the Inhumans, but he wants to focus on more of the, you know, hey, wait, let's balance out, you know, let's give them their equilibrium now that they have these powers right. and all that. And that can just be a constant clash with the both of them. And then so much so that a lot of these things can come to the surface. Maybe one Inhuman is struggling, was also struggling with like addiction, and that's how he brings it up with her. And you know, maybe she
could very well be, yeah.
She overhears like some, or maybe they just had like a session together, and that's when he brings it up. And you know, he's kind of like feeling embarrassed because he never told her that. He's finally saying it for the first time out loud. Like, oh my god, dude, imagine that. He like brings it up for the first time in front of her, and like it's just heartbreaking for him to bring that up. And that's right. kind of like the struggle with him. It's just like, I'm okay with just being on the side when I was in the Afterlife, but now that I'm in like the head of it with you bringing in this team, you know, maybe that could bring up him struggling again with alcohol. I don't know. There's all sorts of things.
It does feel like we need some more information about what, I mean, we do know from, you know, people who have been, sharing information with us that this was a tumultuous season, and there were a lot of problems that were happening on the set and off the set. I mean, that could have factored into this. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
And that could be
that
could be another clash when Lash comes in, or you know, what's his name? Drew?
Andrew?
Andrew. Drew. My bad. Andrew. You know, he's in those therapy sessions, and he's bringing out like the bad thoughts or the bad side of like what this person's powers can do. And he's just like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? It's like, no, they can do this, they can do that, and all that, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's another, oh my God, they could have done so much. And they were kind of doing that when they figured out Andrew is Lash, and he was just like, holy shit, like, Andrew's a monster. Like, there's no turning back for him and all that. Like, that's another moment that I liked.
Yeah, basically. Well, we're going to go ahead and just cut it off here. We're out of time for today, but leave your comments and questions down below, or if you want to add on to this conversation. I think if anybody has any information out there about like what was going on with Lincoln or with Luke Mitchell, or maybe it was just, you know, a fumble and you know, true to true. It's just with a show like S.H.I.E.L.D., when you're just used to like basically 9 out of 10 things going so right, it's just strange. Mm-hmm. The odd thing that just isn't quite working.
Yeah, it's just, it's that one that keeps standing out so much whenever you watch the episodes and you're just kind of like, what happened? You know? And it's not like we're, you know, saying the show is bad or anything, or like kind of
or anything like that.
It's just that one thing is very glaring, but everything else is so great.
Yeah, that's kind of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David, thank you very much for doing it one more time, one more week. I cannot believe it. We're already 16 episodes into this season. I don't know when we're going to pick up season 4. We've got about 4-6 episodes until the end of the season. Then we do our usual season recap, and we're still a ways away from season 4, but like, thank you for joining us, everybody, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.